Well, imagine, if you will, having migrated to another country and being faced with the onset of dementia, as if fleeing to the safety of another country wouldn't be frightening and upsetting enough. Suddenly you're surrounded by what is largely unfamiliar lifestyle, food, buildings, weather, maybe even language. And then there's people driving on the other side of the road. Just that collection there would leave most of us with our heads spinning. Now, given that nearly 500,000 Australians are currently living with dementia, it's fair to assume that it affects new migrants as well. But getting help when you're in a new country is not easy, as anyone who has lived abroad will tell you. Well, that was my experience. In a sign that we actually do care about harmony and helping those in need, Edith Cowan University has been awarded $1.4 million by the National Health and Medical Research Council for research to improve social connections and access to services for people from culturally and linguistically diverse, or CALD, backgrounds living with dementia, as well as their caregivers. Edith Cowan Professor Loretta Baldassare is chief investigator of the team responsible for the research titled Befriending with Jeannie, and joins us on the phone now. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Jeff. Well, thank you for having me.
That's a pleasure. Well, we're all thinking about the same thing. What is dementia? How does it develop? How does it prevent? The speed of onset? What are its causes?
Dementia is a spectrum, really, of illnesses. And I have to say that, unfortunately, despite over 30 years of medical research targeting drug therapies to cure dementia and improve the outcomes of dementia, there's really been very little success. Where there has been success is in social care interventions, so improving our ability to live well with the illness, as well as increased awareness about how to prevent the illness.
How do we identify it? I find myself, say, being confused between dementia and Parkinson's, for example.
Yes. So really, I think it's best to ask a medical doctor those sorts of questions.
Right.
What I think is useful, though, for a general understanding is that there are a cluster of illnesses that can have different kinds of biological causes, but the result is various forms of cognitive decline. And the other thing that's important to be aware of with this kind of cognitive decline is that it can be patchy, it can come and go. Some days are better than others for many people. And so we need to increase our awareness. In my kind of field of work in the social sciences is about increasing our awareness and understanding about how to manage the illness and how to live with it in our communities, and how our communities need to be better able to support people who are living with dementia, and in particular the carers of people who are living with dementia, who have a really hard task.
Well, perhaps we should move on then to the title of the research, which itself deserves a quick introduction. Befriending and Jeannie aren't just a couple of random words thrown together to sound nice. Could you describe the concepts involved there of befriending and how it's achieved with Jeannie?
Yes, I'd love to. So just to go back a few steps to give a sense of why Befriending with Jeannie is the intervention we decided we needed to address some of these issues, we know that social support networks and social engagement are really important to good health outcomes for people living with dementia. If you have fewer than three social supports in your network, you are at risk of increased poor health outcomes, including earlier death. So the role of social supports, these are friends and family, it could be a pet. Many people rank their pets as more important to them than their GPs, for example. could be a neighbour, could be a pharmacist. People who you can rely on to support you. And those kinds of supports increase our access to resources that we might need as we grow older, information about, you know, what we need to do to keep ourselves well. So that's the area we're targeting in this intervention. We're targeting two things: the person living with dementia and increasing their access to good support. And we're also targeting their primary caregivers or their family or informal caregivers, because we know they have a lot of work to do and real struggle often. So what tends to happen is that people living with dementia and their caregivers just stay home because it's too hard to get out and about. People don't understand. They're not patient enough. Our society is not set up for people with cognitive decline. And so the problem is that staying home and not getting out and about actually increases the decline, you know, of the illness. So
it's just like a downward spiral.
That's like a downward spiral, exactly. So what we're trying to do is combine two tested tools. One is befriending, which was developed by the National Ageing Research Institute, and that's really a very simple concept. It's about getting people to... we're using trained befrienders who have cultural and linguistic expertise for the communities that we're working with. But it could be a volunteer. Often befriending is a volunteer program. So anyone out there in the community who's interested, there's lots of opportunity here to get involved. So the befriender does some training, and basically they just visit with the person living with dementia and their caregivers, chat about things that interest them. In our group, they're in addition to that sort of general chatting and just having that social engagement and that cognitive engagement, talking about things that interest you, that are mutually interesting. In addition to that, we're also deploying the Genie tool. And the Genie tool is a really clever tool. It was developed by social workers and health implementation scientists at Southampton University. And what it does is it supports participants to expand their social networks and, importantly, also increases their knowledge about available services in the local community that can help them. So it consists of a database of services and activities that's inbuilt into the online platform. And the Genie facilitator, who's our befriender in this project, goes through a series of questions prompted by the tool to find out what the participant is interested in, what motivates them to get out and about, and the Genie tool will suggest local resources and activities for them to become involved in. We're also going to find out what's missing, what gaps there are in services, and what people might really benefit from, and then we're going to try and develop those as well. And finally, the tool helps you map your social support network through a series of prompts, and then you get this visual representation of your support network, and that kind of encourages a sort of positive understanding in the participants about maybe how healthy their support network is and whether they need to try and expand it. It also gets them to think about maybe there's some negative things about their network, people they better off avoiding, for example.
I have to admit, I didn't think of that one.
Yeah. Actually, research shows that you're better off having fewer but positive supports than more negative support. So that is something to think about, isn't it?
Well, that I imagine, just as, you know, having someone around you being positive and helpful, having someone who's at the opposite end of that scale must drag a person with dementia down far quicker.
Exactly. And there's a lot of unintentional neglect that happens here, especially because of stigma around mental illness and cognitive decline. So what I was talking about before, about just it's just too hard, so you just stay home, that can be an unintentional form of neglect and abuse, actually. No one would call it that in the family, but if you really look at it carefully, if you're stopping the person from having a social engagement dimension to their life, you're really impacting their well-being.
Stopping or just not enabling that life.
That's right.
Now,
the community has a role in this, doesn't it, Jeff? Because we all need to get better at being patient with people who we come in contact with, and learning about how to engage with people with cognitive decline. And this is a broader issue about aging in general, and some of the things we're working on in my research group at Edith Cowan University, we're called the Social Aging Futures, or the SAGE Lab. We're wanting to try and encourage people to think differently about aging, to have a sort of a social revolution around changing our understanding of aging and our relationship to aging. Because we're very lucky in this country. Most of us are going to live longer. But that means that we're going to spend more time in older age and potentially with increasing states of dependency. So what we have to do is invest in our aging futures by thinking about what we need to do today, right now, whatever our age, even if we're really quite young, to say, what do I need to do now to make sure that I can have the best older age possible? And that's also part of the bigger picture of this project.
Oh, because that is part of the problem, isn't it? The brain seems to age much slower than the meat suit, you know, so... If you stop being active in relation to the meat suit, then that the brain just goes along with it.
Exactly. If you don't use it, you lose it. And that's relevant to the brain and the body. So the more we can invest in staying well, whatever our age, aging at every age, the more likely we are to have the best older age we can possibly have. And that's not just up to individuals. We have to think about governments at all level ensuring that we have the services and supports we need, and that's particularly true for culturally and linguistically diverse and other minority groups who really are missing out. There's not a lot of targeted services for these people, and the critical issue here is language. If you're being cared for by someone who doesn't speak your language and you have cognitive decline, you're at increased risk of things like improper use of chemical restraint, so drug therapies used just to manage your behavior to quieten you down, when really the issue is that you can't communicate your needs.
Yeah.
That's really sad, isn't it?
Oh, well, and you'd think it would be something we'd be on top of here. I mean, Australia was already linguistically diverse before invasion. I mean, how do people go negotiating an English language-based medical system when, well, English is probably not even a second language for them, given the need many Indigenous Australians have to speak different dialects?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in your introduction, you know, you were talking about new migrants, and that's very relevant as well. But even older migrants who've lived, you know, their lives here 50 years, 60 years, the Southern Europeans who contributed all of their working lives to Australia, all of their working lives and contributed so much, these are people who also revert back to their first language when they have cognitive decline and aging in general. And so, you know, people out there might think, well, these migrants, you know, they should learn English. Well, that's true, and most of them do. But we also have to be aware of the extra challenges that happen as we grow older, all of us.
That's a bloody easy thing to say to somebody, that they should just learn a language. I, you know, spent several years in Indonesia, and I don't know, maybe I'm thick as a brick, but I found it really hard picking up the language.
It is extraordinarily difficult, especially if you don't have a lot of education in your first language. You know, lots of people struggle in their first language as well as their second language. And these are, you know, people in our community who are contributing enormously. So yeah, we do really need, and you're right, we should be better at this. We really should be better at this.
Well, Professor, there's so much more to look into on this research, but I would actually like to come back and talk to you when you're into the program a little bit and see how the findings are coming through. Professor, thank you very much for joining us on the record this morning.
Thanks again, Jeff. Love to talk to you again.
Talk soon. That was Professor Loretta Baldassare from Edith Cowan University, talking to us there about her program, Befriending with Jeannie, which sounds awesome.